special edition of the By The Man MFC podcast. Today, myself and Jay are joined by Motherwell legend Brian Martin. Brian, welcome along, mate. It's very much appreciated.
Cheers, no problem.
Well, I think the best plan is to kind of talk over your career at Motherwell, and then we'll... I believe you've been at quite a lot of games this season as well, so we'll concentrate on the current team and a fight against possible relegation, maybe a relegation playoff. We'll focus on that a bit later on. But really, I think it would be better to concentrate on your time, which was a really successful time for the club, arriving in the back of the Scottish Cup win. How big a move was it to join Motherwell at that time?
Yeah, it was quite strange how it came about, me joining Motherwell, because it was with Simon, obviously, before then, and what happened was, is Simon were in trouble. They just got a new manager, David Hay, came on the scene, and he signed a lot of players, with Chick Charnley, Lex Bailey, Fraser Wishart from Motherwell to Simon. And at the start of the season, things started to go kind of a pear shape for Simon, and this is how I actually ended up in Motherwell. It was because he actually overspent his budget, David Hay. He actually bought Roy Aitken from Newcastle. And how it came about was, we actually played Falkirk up at Brockville one game. We lost 3-0. And I was in the shower with Big Roy. And Big Roy's like, I think it was his second or third game for the team. He says, what's going on? What's happening? I says, Roy, we've tried players, different positions. You know, I think we just need more players, better players to join the club to lift them up. And well, obviously Roy Aitken was more parlay with David Hay than I thought. So he actually said to David Hay had a wee meeting on Monday, and with the team up in the boardroom, he says, right, who wants to play with this club? Who doesn't want to play with this club, he actually said. And we were sitting down, they pointed the finger at me and said, well, why are you saying we need new players at this club? And I looked at him and went, I never said that to you. I said, well, obviously Roy Aitken's obviously said it to him. So I kind of had a wee sly look at Roy Aitken. You know, it was a thing with players do. They talk about things, other things, and they're supposed to be kept secret, sort of thing. He actually came down my throat, David Hay actually was jumped down my throat, actually getting me reacts, and I said, listen, I'm not moving anywhere, so I'm staying with this club to fight this problem. I said, well, don't talk about other players behind their back. And I was kind of shocked by that, you know, because every player talks about every player behind their back, no matter who it is. Every player has a wee comment about everybody, and a wee moment you have in certain games, you know, after the game. And I was kind of shocked. And we did the training, came down to Tuesday, and Gordon Smith was his number two. Gordon Smith used to play with the Rangers, and Brian says, hey, Tom McLean wants to speak to you. And I says, what? I says, is this what this was all about yesterday? David Hay kind of trying to get me walk out of the club. They said, well, that's what it is. The thing is, Gordon Smith actually told me the truth. He says, listen, he's overspent his budget, and he needs money, and you're the only player MD wants to buy. So I said, well, I've got to speak to Tom McLean. So I went up the third part of the Tuesday, spoke to Tom McLean, and I liked what he said to me. He said, well, plus the fact that Motherwell was only 10 minutes, 15 minutes drive from my house, rather than Paisley, which is 45 minutes drive, you know. Mm-hmm. So I said, yeah. And he says, listen, yeah, I'm saying, he said, I'm obviously not wanted at St Mirren. I says, he wants me out, so yeah. And Tom McLean wanted me, and that's where I arrived at Motherwell.
Brian, this is Jay. I was just going to ask, you mentioned there that you know, you were seen as the only player that MD wanted to buy. That, as well as you know, quite a big transfer fee, you know, now that would be quite a big transfer fee for Motherwell to be paying £175,000, never mind in 1991. Did that put any added pressure on you to succeed at Motherwell?
I asked obviously the question where he was going to play, because I was kind of a utility player for St Mirren. I played in various positions for him. I played full-back, centre-halves, midfield, you know, wide the midfield, centre midfield. I played in various positions for St Mirren, and Tom McLean says, listen, no, he says, you're the type of player we need at this club. We need a player that can play in different positions, because clubs go through injuries and suspensions and stuff like that. They need to have players that can adapt. And he said to me, because I'm not signing one player, see, I'm saying 4 to 5 players on you. He says, and you know, if you divide 175,000 between 4 to 5 players, it comes down to a small amount, you know. So that's what he said to me. And I did play various positions at the start at Motherwell, and eventually, 3 or 4 years down the line, I went to the centre half position. But as I say, that's what Tom McLean said to me.
Going into that dressing room at Fir Park, obviously it's a team, the 1991 Cup winning side, is a team that's still idolised to this day.
Yep.
There must have been many, many big characters in the dressing room, and that must have been quite exciting for yourself, even as an established professional at the time of arriving at Fir Park.
Yeah, well, I remember Kirky, Mike Kirky said the big softy, actually. He said to John Philbin, here's another guy coming and trying to take your position, but you see him off as well. I started laughing, you know. But that's the way the atmosphere was about the club, you know. It was a bit of a kind of a wee slag here and there, but it was a gentle slag, wasn't it? It wasn't a dig at him, it was just kind of trying to get the mood going, you know. But it was a good atmosphere. David Cooper was a fantastic player for Motherwell, everyone knows that. And it was great to play alongside David. I mean, the skill the guy had with his left foot was unbelievable, and it was a joy to play with him. And, you know, another great players alongside. I joined Motherwell as well. You had Big Chris McCart centre half, and you had Meadrag come along. You had lots of great players, Bob McKinnon. The fantastic players came at Motherwell at the time, Tommy Coyne, Dougie Arnott. All these guys were at their peak of their career, you know, and they were hitting the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything together, because I thought it was to separate Celtic and Rangers in that year was a big, big thing, because Celtic and Rangers were just wiping the floor with them at the time, you know.
See, And a kind of sad note, you're talking about David Cooper there. It must be incredible to look back and think it was 20 years since Davy's passing. I know it's been marked by Motherwell, it was marked by Rangers at their game yesterday. You look at that squad and then think of guys like Mowgli and Phil O'Donnell and Jamie Dolan. It's incredibly sad that quite a few of your teammates have passed in such a short period of time. It must be very difficult.
It brings you together. You realise that football's just a game. You know, life and death is a big thing, and these guys obviously went before their time, and it's so sad to see it going. And I can remember various conversations with every one of them, you know, and you kind of say, God, I'd love to reminisce with these guys, but it's not going to happen, you know. You love to reminisce in the past, and you can't actually speak to these guys anymore. It's just so sad. You love to get together, because Jamie, I was very friendly with Jamie. Me and Jamie always shared the room when we went in pre-season tours. We all shared the room together, and we were best of pals. Jamie stays in Salisbury and I stayed in Airdrie, and we kind of had a few drinks and that on a Saturday night after the game, stuff like that. And the Sunday that Jamie went out for the run, he died. I actually phoned him on the Friday night. I was manager of the Stonehouse Violet at the time. Jamie just quit the Broxburn manager's job, and I phoned him up. I said, what are you doing? He says, he says, I'm going to try and get back playing again in junior. I said, well, come down to Stonehouse. He says, I'm doing that. I said, I'm just jogging. I'm just getting myself fit again. I said, well, listen, phone me next week and I'll get you down here. So I'm in the hand at Stonehouse. And then that was a Sunday. The Sunday later after that, Friday he died. And I was so shocked. It was scary. You know?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's still horrendous to to think about it, and I'm sorry for bringing it up. It's just obviously.
They say there's things you remember all whatever career you do, you always remember the good things, but then the sad times at Mull for me were the deaths of all these guys, you know, Jamie, Phil, Davey, and wee Mowgli. You know, you want to kind of sit down and have a wee drink with them and have a wee talk about the past, but you can't do it anymore. So, you know, it's. You miss guys like that, you know.
Brian, it's often been said that the team in 93-94 was actually, they were points-wise closer to winning the title than the team in 94-95 that actually went on and finished second.
Yep.
Is it your opinion that was the case, or did it feel in 94-95, splitting the so-called big two, that was a bigger achievement?
Without a doubt, yeah. Actually, when you look at the two different years, that's when the points changed. Under Tom McLean, we finished kind of a third in the league. If it was like 2 points per win that year, right? And the next year, it was under Adam McLean, we finished second in the league, right? But it was 3 points a win. But if tables were turned, if it was 3 points a win under Tom McLean, we'd have finished second. If it was 2 points a win under Adam McLeish, we'd have finished third. So it was a big turning point, the way they had the 3 points for a win, you know. So a lot of people kind of forget about that. Because I actually looked up, I went, hold on here, I says, listen, if it was 3 points a win under Tom McLean, we'd have finished second. If it was 2 points a win under Adam McLeish, we'd have finished third. So it was. There's not much of a difference, but that's how it happened, you know.
The 94-95 season brought that goal at Ibrox. I don't know if you'll have seen it, but one of our good friends, Ian Buchanan, dug out the video of that goal that day at Ibrox. Yep. A storming run, and I don't think Andy Gorham even saw the ball coming out on the way back. That must have been a real career highlight, an absolute fantastic goal with great memories there.
I always remember, I took the ball off Brian Loudrop, skipped by Mikhail Achenko, brushed Gascoigne out of the road, and rattled one in the top corner. I could always hear the McLeish and Andy Watson at the sidelines shout, pass it, pass it, pass it. I said, I'm not passing nothing. I'm just having a go. And that was one of the ones, it's a wonder strike. You know, every player gets him in their career at one time or another. So that happened at a time actually when we were struggling to get some, we were struggling at the time at the bottom of the league. We needed some momentum to kind of a wee bit, I think get us up and running again, and we lost 3-2 that game, but to go to Ibrox and score two goals, any team going there was a massive achievement at the time, because the tighter players they had at Ibrox at the time, you know.
Obviously the reward for finishing in the upper reaches of the league is European football, and that was the case with some big names coming to Fir Park, particularly Borussia Dortmund. It was two memorable ties, particularly the first leg, where we gave the Germans a real, real scare. Again, fantastic memories, and maybe a wee bit of regret, given that Tommy Coyne had a few good chances. It really could have went down in folklore as one of the biggest results for a Scottish team in Europe.
Yeah, it could have been. We actually, over there, over in Dortmund, we were the best team by far. We had them under the rack, and as you said, Tommy had two or three chances to score. But for Stefan Kloss's feet, we probably won that game, because I had two stops with his feet, the keeper, and Tommy threw them. But everybody forgets, we actually got a man sent off. We won't get sent off over there the last 15 to 20 minutes or so. And we do get the return tie, do get sent off in the first 15 minutes. So everybody forgets that we were down to 10 men against a top quality team, a team that actually went on to win the UEFA Cup, and then they went on to win the Champions League the year after. So, I mean, for Mullow to run them so close, it was a tremendous achievement, and we got a lot of confidence from it. And obviously, it catapulted me to the international team after that. I think I get that's when I get noticed with Craig Brown and I get put in the squad for the Euro 96s. So 1996. So it was a great achievement. Every player did their part over in Dortmund. We're all well up for it, and it was just unfortunate we never got what we deserved, you know.
Can I ask, Brian, you just mentioned there about obviously getting into the Scotland squad, and obviously it's quite a relevant topic given Scotland are playing later today and I'm sitting here in my kilt with a beer in my hand ready to go. In terms of Motherwell players in the Scotland squad, the last couple of years especially with, you know, message boards, that kind of thing, there's always the kind of discussion among some Motherwell fans that perhaps the club is seen as maybe unfashionable when it comes to international football. In previous years we've had calls for, you know, like some Martin Corrigan, Mark Reynolds to get called into the squad. I was just wondering if that's something you kind of felt at the time, whether playing for Motherwell maybe lessened your chances to get in the Scotland squad, or whether you think that's nonsense, and whether there was any other players you played with that you think should have been represented at international level.
Yeah, well, I was I remember if I had played with Celtic at Rangers, I'd have got more Scotland caps without a doubt, because Celtic Rangers play a lot of European ties every year. So I think it's playing against European opposition, that's what influences managers to pick you. And if you're playing with the lower league teams, the lower teams in the Premier League, you don't play as much European football. If Motherwell wouldn't have made European football the 3 or 4 years we did, when I played with them, I probably wouldn't have played for Scotland. I believe that is a fact. And you can see a Scotland manager's point of view. You know, you've got to play against European opposition to experience, you know, that environment, so you can pick for your national team. And that's why now it was all Celtic Rangers, down south guys, playing for Scotland. And to this day, you look at the Scotland squad, there's very few Rangers players in it. There's maybe 3 or 4 Celtic players, and the rest of them are fairly Championship or the English Premiership down south. There's very few guys in the Scotland squad from the Premier League just now, just because the standard of the football in Scotland just now is not to a high standard, with the Rangers not being there, Hearts and Hibs not being the top league. So usually had Rangers, Celtic, Hearts and Hibs, they always had about, maybe between them, you'd have about 10, 12 players in the Scotland squad when these guys were the top league, you know.
Just kind of following on from that, the years of success, the things under Alex McLeish took a bit of a turn for worse, shall we say, in a real season of struggles in 96-97, where the club very narrowly avoided relegation. It was came down to almost a playoff before the playoff against Dunfermline at Fir Park on the final day. That was certainly squeaky bum time, wasn't it?
I've been in the, half of the experience to being with St Mirren, that's the position as well. You know, the last game of the season, you've got to have, we're St Mirren went up to Tynecastle, away to Tynecastle, we had to win to stay up, and we won 1-0 that day. And, you know, but as long as you've got a chance to stay in the league, the last game of the season, you've got to pull your socks up and just do the business. And we knew at Dunfermline, that game, a point would save us. And for Dunfermline, they had nothing to lose, so they came out all guns blazing, sort of thing. We're 2-1 down, obviously Big Mitch scored with his free kick, and it saved us. But these are things that happened. But it was unfortunate the way things happened with Al McLeish, Aylett, Paul Lambert and Rob McKinnon go. No, I think Rob went to the Bosman rulings. Paul went to obviously Dortmund, and Rob McKinnon went to 20th Scary, and you're thinking, why did they go? And well, I actually spoke to Rob and Paul, and obviously they asked for the money they asked for Motherwell at the time. It sounds a lot of money, but when you think it, I think they were asking for the same wages you were on plus 50,000 a year sign on fee in 3 years. Now that comes down to like £300,000 for the two players. To keep two current international players with Mullow for the next 3 years, it was costing Mullow Football Club £300,000. It sounds a lot of money, but when you think of what McLeish did, he went and bought guys like John Henry from Tottenham Hotspur for £200,000, Sean McSkinnon from Kilmarnock for about £150,000, £200,000, Andy Roddy for Aberdeen for £100,000. You know, there was near £500,000 spent on three guys that never, I'm not saying they're bad players, but they never really stamped their authority in the Motherwell team. Whereas we lost two fantastic players, two current international players to teams, you know, not other teams, not the Bosman really, but it would only cost them £300,000. And I think that was the turning point in Motherwell Football Club. They two international players left, we never replaced them with MD. And that's how we went in that situation.
Can I ask, Brian, obviously taking into consider or sort of drawing parallels between that side and, you know, the current predicament of the Motherwell side, to go from playing in a team that was, you know, finishing second, finishing third, enjoying European football, really looking to push on and achieve things, to go from that to finding yourself at the other end of the table like the current squad have done, was that a bit of a shock to the system? What was it like in the changing room? Did the mood change? Was it a different atmosphere? Or was it, you know, a bit harder to motivate yourself? I mean, how did things kind of change over that period?
Well, when I played in the centre half role, we were all McKinnon. I was kind of a left centre half. Tom McLean played with the three, and McLeish kind of stuck to that for the next season. It was the same team, but it was that season we started to dismantle that team. That team that finished second, you've got to kind of not weaken it. Keep the current players. Bring in guys that are going to push these current players for a position, but he let the guys go. He brought in players that weren't as the same caliber of players that went. So it only takes two or three players to make a team. When you look at Motherwell just now, they're on the up, I think, because Scott McDonald and Pearson, they're going to score goals for Motherwell. They will. When you get guys that got a bit of quality, will score goals. These guys will score goals, and Scott McDonald's proved that. He's not match fit just now, but I'll tell you what, in two or three games time, that guy will be buzzing. He'll score a lot of goals, and Stephen Pearce has just been unlucky. I've watched Motherwell in the past 3 or 4 weeks. He just had the wee breaks that he usually gets, but they two guys have transformed the team to me. I think they've given everybody else a bit of confidence, saying, oh, we're going to score goals, and that's what, and you, when you get that confidence, it makes you more positive when you go into the park, and I can definitely see that happen just now at Motherwell.
See, a kind of similarity to the current day team, as well as they suffered disappointment to what we would regard as an unfancied side in Europe, the Icelandic team, Starnin', certainly weren't at the level we would have expected to go out to. Maipa 47. Yeah. Looking back in that team, a lot of excellent players in the squad, but at the same time, they came to Fir Park and the 3-1 defeat was seen as a bit of a disaster, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I remember that. I remember the pre-season to that season, and we went down to Durham, and we played one of the non-league teams in Durham, and I always remember we actually got on the bus that picked us up from. We stayed in college digs or something like that, some college digs in there, and the bus that picked us up was one of the buses you press the button to go off, you know. It's been like, hold on here, it's the bus, it was one of the buttons, the passenger bus you pick up, the number 57 or whatever you go to. It was one of them. So we were sitting in the bus going to this game, I'm like, this is a joke, and we've got a European time in 2 weeks' time. And we actually played two games. We played that at, it was Durham University we played or something like that. Then we played Hartlepool at Hartlepool's Park. My first game, our first home game at Fir Park that season was against Maipan 47. We never played a friendly at home that year. That was our first game, and that's what shocked me. I says, my first game at home, we've not played. Usually get a big English team up for a pre-season friendly to get you in the mood of it, but we played that was our first game. Our first serious game of the season was the Europa League. I was like, can't believe this. And we weren't fit at all. We were not match fit, and it proved 2 weeks later, we went over there and we beat them 2-0. We should have beat them by more than 2-0. But that 2 weeks, if we'd have played maybe more competitive games against a higher opposition, we would never have got beat 3-1 that day. And I blame the management for that.
Moving on from there, there was McLeish eventually moved on to Hibs. Then in came Harry Campman, and it was I've heard you say before, and you've not given very much time for what happened following that. I think I speak for many Motherwell fans when I say that it was very disrespectful the way that someone that had served the club so well was treated. Is it something that you still kind of struggle to accept, the way that things ended for you at Motherwell?
Yeah, I was totally disappointed the way it happened, because I was a regular. I was never a substitute for Motherwell. I probably only managed one game under Tommy McLean, and Al McLeish dropped me a couple of times. Right, I had a lot of things. I had a lot of run-ins with Al McLeish. He was a young manager coming through, and he probably progressed to be a better manager through the experience that I had with him, you know. But the Harry Campman scenario was just a joke. I couldn't believe that this wee guy came over and disrespected all the players. He didn't show any respect to nobody. To me, in my eyes, he didn't show any. He was a wee Hitler, and I didn't like him. He was totally ignorant to everybody. He didn't know how to speak to you. He was, being a football manager, you've got to put your arm around players at times, and he wasn't that type of guy. And it was the worst appointment ever for Motherwell Football Club, and I'm just sorry that it happened, because I had another 2 or 3 years left in me, maybe even being part of the Motherwell Football Club behind the scenes, you know, because, you know, you grow to love a club, and you know, I've lived in Airdrie all my life, Motherwell's bitter rivals, and, you know, never played for Airdrie, and everywhere I go in Airdrie, that's that big man that plays with Motherwell, you know. It's just one of these things that you say, you know, you take a club to your heart, and Mull, that's why I took Mull to my heart, and I was disappointed the way it ended, because I thought that it ended in a friendlier term, but it didn't. But that was down to one wee guy for Finland. That was it.
The thing was, his tenure was so short-lived and unsuccessful as well, wasn't it? It seemed to kind of clear out the experienced popular figures and replace them with, it was wholesale changes, just numbers and numbers of bodies rather than
any real realms
of quality.
Yeah, he ripped the club apart. He got rid of myself, Tommy Coyne. We all kind of went wayward after that. It was just a shame the way it happened. But that's what happens in football. You know, one manager comes in, he can either be great for the club or can be disastrous for the club. And to me, Harry Campman was disastrous for the club.
In terms of appointing an unknown manager, Ian Barraclough obviously was appointed in December at the club, and I must admit I was very quick to question it, and as results were going bad at the start of the year, I was really, really concerned that he wasn't the man for the job. I've had to put my hands up and eat some humble pie in recent weeks, given the results have changed, the fitness levels and the new signings are beginning to make an impact. You certainly see more desire than was apparent in the early parts of the season. Do you believe that some players can get into the mould where they're so comfortable under a manager that they perhaps let standards slip? It seemed that certain players who were favourites under Stuart McCall had dropped a level, and Ian Barclough's come in and and kick some arses when it was needed done. Sometimes it can work the other way, can't it?
Yeah, well, you swore there. Why did you swear in this programme?
It depends. We've got strict guidelines.
I've been watching a few times this year. I do the hospitality and the VIP lounges when I can, and I've been impressed. But the thing that impressed me is the. Who's the guy who plays wide left?
Oh, Marvin Johnson.
Aye, he's a good player. He's great left foot, great crossing the ball. He's been very impressive. We just need somebody to end these crosses. And I say that I can see once these guys get to full fitness, I can see them doing things. And obviously, McDonald and Pearson have been great signings as well. It's lifted the support. It's lifted the crowd. You can see. Mallow can score goals now, but earlier on in the season, you're saying, where's this goal going to come from? We don't look as if they're penetrating any team. But with the pace I've got in the squad, with wee Lionel as well, the guys are rapid, a lot of pace. You've got guys that can score goals now, so things are looking up now. I know it's a bit, maybe a wee bit, we're about 5 or 6 points short of. Missing that playoff zone, we've got to get them back. But it's achievable. It's not, we can't do it. We can do it with the squad we've got. And these 5 games, the split, are going to be big games for Mallow. And I believe if Mallow wins three or four of them, they'll stay up. They won't get into the playoff zone. But I think now we're looking at the playoff zone. But if we get good results in this split, we'll miss it. We'll get out of it. Yep, definitely.
So when you're actually looking at the results and the league table, I mean, obviously you're most well known for your time at Motherwell, but also St Mirren. Is it a bit sort of bizarre to see two of your former teams kind of in that situation? And obviously, I need to ask, if you had to pick one of them to go down, who would it be? St Mirren?
Between the two clubs, I've played 11 years of football between the two clubs, four with St Mirren, seven with Mallow, and I've loved both my career with both clubs. But for me, at this moment in time, I've grown to love Mallow. I was kind of I explained earlier on the programme how I arrived at Mallow. It wasn't my choice to go there. It was me getting put out of St Mirren to go there. But at the time, I was impressed with what Tony McLean said to me. And I seen a future in Mallow for myself, take my career forward. And it eventually did. It was the greatest move I ever made in my life. And my heart's with Mallow. I love my time at St Mirren. The fans are life and blood at every club. And I know a lot of St Mirren fans, I know a lot of Mallow fans, and it's just a shame the two of them are in the same situation, but I want to see Mallow stay up. I want to see St Mirren stay up, but I think one of them's going to go down, but hopefully it's not Mallow.
Just a wee bit again of the historical side. There's a brilliant Mark Hatley story that we can't get you on here and not hear the Mark Hatley story, because it's absolutely fantastic. I spoke to you for the programme 2 or 3 years ago and heard it for the first time. I thought, this is absolute gold, and I honestly cannot. The floor's yours. Just go and tell it, please.
Before the games, we're playing Rangers at Fir Park, and I think we're leading at the time, and Rangers are getting a bit upset. They're kind of going for a title when we were kind of putting the scuppers on there. And Big Mark's kind of barged into my back, trying to kind of knock me off the ball. And I says, is that a basic day, Biggie? I says, you're in my back pocket, Biggie, you're never going out there. He says, listen, mate, he says, I've got 300 grand, I've got 500 grand worth of cars in my driveway, what have you got in yours? Now, there's no way I was going to say, it's a wee clapped out mini, I paid £400 for it. So I was like, kind of I can't say, I've got money. I said, 24 slabs, a ton of red chips. I said, beat that. That was it. Now I've got, by the way, I've not in class, I've got a monoblock driveway now, just to make a state.
We had asked for some questions in the various web forums and in Facebook and Twitter, and one of the most interesting ones I thought was, how do you get on when you actually go for a pint in there, Drew, given your leanings towards Motherwell and the fact you represented the club so loyally for so many years?
Well, not only Motherwell, I actually played for Albion Rovers and Hamilton. So I've been a manager team apart from Airdrie, and I've lived in Airdrie all my life. And the Section B, the so-called Section B supporters, I know them all, I used to go to school with them all. I've had a few run-ins, I've been chased. I remember getting chased. When I played for Hamilton Accies, we played Airdrie at New Year's Day, and my house was a totally 2-minute walk from the park. I just lived up the old Broomfield, and I just walked down to the park in the stadium that day, and it was New Year's Day. I can't remember what year it was. But we beat Airdrie 4-1 that day at New Year's Day, and it was 4-0 at half time. And I remember walking off the bar, I was playing wide right for a winger, and I laid on three crosses, three goals. Jamie Fairley got a hat trick, 3 goals. We're 4-0 at half time, and I turned around and I seen all the section B supporters, and I waved them, go home, the game's over. Go to the pub and get drunk. And then I always remember, I walked out the park after the game, and I actually get chased by a bunch of supporters. I remember just running. I got to my local pub, like in the door, and I was panting. I said, "But why, what are you running for?" I said, "Oh, the idiots are chasing me." So, and there's only certain places I go near to drink, everybody knows that I'm from a family full of Celtic supporters, and my dad was a great Celtic supporter, and I always remember the pub I went to. A drinking is like mainly Celtic people when they go and drinking it, because that's where I feel safe. I can't go to a pub where it's all either Rangers or Airdrie supporters. You know, I'm not going in there. I'll get slung up. So basically, I went to a pub. Remember the year that Motherwell, Scott McDonald scored the 2 goals that gave Rangers a league.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, my son was 18, 19 at the time. I said, "Well, we'll go and watch Celtic. We'll watch the Celtic Motherwell game in the pub." So I took him for a pint. We're standing in the pub, and 5 minutes ago, Celtic won on all night. Celtic won the league. And this wee man, the old man in the pub, great Celtic supporter, started handing out all the big cigars. He's handing out all these big King Edward cigars to everybody. He had a big box of cigars. And so I just won the league again. And I says, "That's 5 minutes ago, mate." I says, "Told you, we see our Rangers have won it up at Edinburgh, you know." And Scott McGill scored. I was like, 2 goals. I was like, "Oh no." I stood there with my son. The whole pub went quiet, right? Full time whistle. Celtic have lost the league. Rangers have won the league. The pub was quiet. And I was sitting there. I was standing there with a half pint. And I said to my son, "Right, let's go." He says, "What?" Because he's standing there. He's Celtic daft, you know. I says, "No." I says, "Let's go." He says, "How?" I says, "Because I'm an ex-Motherwell player. Some idiot in here is going to say something." I says, "I'm..." So I grabbed him, discovered it. We actually walked to home that day. Oh, I had to go because the mood just changed. For kind of we're going to, and it just all silent. I says, "Right, there's going to be havoc here. Ex-Motherwell guy, I'm going to get it in the neck." I said, "I'm moving." So I walked out the pub that day.
Did you get to keep your cigar?
I don't smoke, you know, I don't do that sort of stuff. No. But this is all memories, football. It's great memories. Everybody go, you know.
We'll take a quick few minutes to preview the Kilmarnock game on Saturday. On the back of a brilliant 4-0 victory against Hamilton, we really want to keep the momentum going. The international break perhaps stopped some of that. The game against Kilmarnock a few weeks ago looked back on as a bit of a missed opportunity. I wanted to ask Brian, the plastics pitch at Kilmarnock, would you see that something as an advantage to Gary Locke's team, given that the train on it, and then the players will obviously be very familiar with and they'll be able to build a squad, I suppose, of players that they won't be as susceptible to injuries. For instance, Stevie Hamill's been out all season. basically on the back of playing in Iceland and a poor artificial surface. For me, it's a huge advantage, but as an ex-professional, you'll be certainly better placed to tell us.
Yeah, personally, I've actually played on the one at I played at Hamels Park on the Arsenal one and the Airdries. I played on them, and there is a difference with the bounce of the ball, as in the degree it comes up. If a ball comes in at a 45 degree on a grass surface, it'll take off at a 45 degree from the bounce off sort of thing. That's just talking sake. But on an AstroTurf, the ball comes in at a 45 degree, it takes off at a 55 degree. You know what I mean? So it's not the same bounce. The ball's not kind of a fluent with the bounce. And plus the fact, when the ball's moving on the ground, you try to kick it, and if it's got a wee bit of spin on it, it can actually just spin right off your boot and go paywall somewhere. You know, it's just, it is a surface. If it's dry, if it's not wet, the ball doesn't bounce naturally, and it's a different bounce. The ball doesn't give it doesn't skid. You know, a skiddy bounce you get in a grass park, the ball doesn't do that. It just bounces kind of a straight up, and that's the big problem with the parks. The bounce isn't natural, and compared to a grass park. For instance, I do the reports for Opta, and we did the Airdrie game. I did the Airdrie V, I think it was Dumbarton, about 2 years ago. And at half time, I do the stats, corner kick, stuff like that, right? At half time, it was a sunny day, very dry. The ball wasn't the same bounce, the ball wasn't bouncing right, it wasn't skidding, it was sticking up. Players were kind of falling over the ball when they were running with it. It was dry. At half time, it was nothing each. There was one shot and goal on target and one corner kick the whole first half. And I said to myself, it's a boring game, right? Boom. But half time, the rain came down, it started chucking it down. Second half, the park was wet, skinny. And it ended up 5-2 to Dumbarton, and there were 16 corners in the second half. Just because of the rain came down. And if the rain never came down, that game would end up nothing each. That's just how the weather affects these parts. They've got to be wet to be natural. If they're dry, they're not natural. The players are sticking. They're sticking. It's like a sticky carpet you're running on. If it's dry, it's got to be wet all times. And it is an advantage to teams that have got that at home, because they know what to expect on a Saturday. Mother might go down there. Hopefully, if it's wet, there's not much of an advantage to the home team. But if it's a dry surface, the home team will not be many goals. But put it this way, don't pick both teams to score if it's a dry sunny day next week.
Jay, for one of the first times this season, Ian Barraclough's got a bit of a selection headache. A lot of players back from injury. Stephen Hamill says that he may be ready for Saturday's game. I don't think there's any chance he'll be risked on that surface. But it's a good thing that in the back of a great result, we've got a few positions where we've got two or three options.
Yeah, I mean, that's the feel-good factor's kind of back again. You know, you've got the options, you're playing well, and we're actually going into a game. Probably in the back of a lot of Motherwell fans' minds, we're probably going into this game as slight favourites. That might be, you know, not bore out by the bookies' odds and that kind of thing. But I think based on our performance against Accies, allied to just how much progress we're making, and, you know, Brian mentioned them earlier, guys like Marvin Johnston, Stephen Pearson, Scott McDonald, you know, we're clicking now. We're starting to see the progress. We're starting to play really well. Yeah, we're going into a game not just in that situation, but we're going into a game where you do have players on the bench now that can come on and change it. You know, you've got Nathan Thomas, Dom Thomas, you know, Ainsworth, I imagine, will start. You know, you've got players who can make a difference now. So we've kind of went full circle from earlier in the season where we were losing games, but then you were looking at your bench and there was nobody that could come on and change things. But now we're in a completely different situation, and it's a brilliant position to be in. It seems a lot more optimistic now.
Yeah, you've got to have competitiveness all over the park for positions. You know, you've got to have that in every squad. And while we're getting back to that, and it's a headache for the manager, but at the end of the day, it's a good headache, not a bad headache. It's rather having too many players too few players. But it's a big game next week. And as I said, if we're all hoping it's a kind of a rainy, wet surface, because these surfaces, as I said, they're dry, they're hard to play on. But there's a lot of pace in Motherwell Football Club now. There's a lot of guys with a lot of pace, and that's what the game's all about. At certain times, you know, you've got to have guys with pace. You can get by people like the two white guys. Unbelievable pace. Mike Pearson's got pace coming through midfield, breaking through. That's what you want all over your team. And Motherwell are looking a right fit, pacey team just now. And that's what pace gets you, that extra yard, it gets you that wee extra edge on other players. And Motherwell are looking as if they've got that now. At the start of the season, everybody was kind of a laborious, and you know, there's no pace to the team. Oh, who's that about? The Wains are in.
It's like cavalry attack, yeah. I think that's possibly a great point to wrap it up on before things get very noisy in this house. We've got to mention that the Buster's not here today. Last seen out round about 11 o'clock last night, so if anyone sees him, tell him to go to his bed. Brian, thanks very much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure to hear some of these stories. I'm sure the supporters that listen to it will enjoy it just as much. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. It's a pleasure to kind of reminisce over the past. It's something that us old players do. We love reminiscing. We've been somebody at one point in our career, you know. But it's a pleasure to be on the show. Thanks.
Jay, thanks as always, mate.
Yeah, I'm disappointed I need to go to the Scotland game now. I could sit here and listen to Brian talking about his stories all day.
Well, go and have a pint, watch the Scotland game, hope we get a result.
Aye, that's it.
Your old thing. Right, guys.
You've been listening to the By The Men MFC podcast. We'll be back next Sunday. Until then, thanks and goodbye.